Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Sarah Rawlins. She's Program Associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And we've invited Sarah to talk about some of her research dealing with Social Security and its future. Thanks so much for making time to come on our program, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So first off, just say a little bit, if you would, about the work you do at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And I know there's a lot of work being done there on U.S. foreign policy issues as well as domestic and economic issues, as the title of the organization implies.
Yeah. So I work on CBER's domestic team. So I mostly deal with our research on domestic issues. So we look a lot at, wages and labor, and also paid leave and retirement, like Social Security, which is what I wrote about most recently, the Social Security payroll tax cap.
Absolutely. So as we talked about earlier tonight, the future of Social Security has become a topic of debate across the U.S., especially after President Biden called out Republicans' plan to sunset or cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid benefits. And that was, of course, in his recent State of the Union address before Congress. For years, we've heard that Social Security and Medicare are going to run short of funds unless some policy changes are implemented. And Sarah, I wondered if you'd kind of give us a status check, the pulse of Social Security, which we're mostly dealing with tonight. But tell our audience what the status of the Social Security Trust Fund is today and the dangers ahead.
Yeah. So there is a shortfall in the Social Security Trust Fund, which I think absolutely everyone knows at this point because it's heavily talked about whenever Social Security comes up. I think a lot of people don't realize, though, that the shortfall that we're talking about, while it's certainly not ideal because the program is really valuable, is not like the, world-ending cliff that a lot of people see it to be. Right now, we would be looking at reducing benefits to maybe like 70 or 80% of what they are now starting in 2035. So while that's definitely not good, it's also not a catastrophe. Social Security will still be there like when I retire.
Right. But nobody wants to see a decrease of 15 or 20% of the benefits that people have contributed over the years, right? So it is a big issue, and but it's good to put it in perspective as you did. So while Republicans have proposed both increases in the eligibility age to receive Social Security as well as benefit cuts, there is one very simple adjustment that can be made to Social Security payments that would fix the system for decades to come. And I wondered if you'd tell us more about what's for shorthand called scrapping the cap.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just wrote a piece about this last week. So what a lot of people don't realize is that Social Security contributions to the trust fund are actually capped at the first $160,200 that someone makes in just wage income. So for most people, that has no effect because 94% of the population makes under $160,000 a year. But for the 6% of the population who make more than that, as soon as they earn over that cap, they no longer pay Social Security taxes out of their paycheck. So if you make $1 million, you stopped paying Social Security on February 28th. And for the rest of the year, you wouldn't pay into that program. That doesn't apply to most people. And, you know, when we do have very pervasive conversations around Social Security, I think every year, really, where it comes up that the program has a shortfall, it's pretty disappointing to leave it underfunded by giving way to the wealthy instead of having them pay their fair share. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, and it's pretty disappointing.
So what is the status of the proposal now to change the cap, which, and maybe you could describe for our listeners, if the cap were lifted, or if that cap were lifted, how secure would Social Security be in the coming years?
Yeah. So if that cap were lifted, all it would mean was that the 6% of people who don't pay into Social Security all year long would have to start. They'd pay 6.2% of their paycheck, just like every other American. And the Congressional Research Service actually estimated that just scrapping the cap would eliminate 73% of the shortfall in the trust fund, which is not all of it, but 73% of a problem solved is quite a bit. And there could be other small changes made to the program that could give it solvency in the long run very easily. For example, increasing the tax from 6.2% of a paycheck to 6.9% of the paycheck could keep the program solvent for the next 75 years.
That's great. And so there is some discussion about including other sources of income, not just paychecks. People get dividend checks. There are other, major sources of income, especially the wealthy get, that the rest of us don't. Can you talk about that, making that inclusive in terms of what the Social Security payments would be calculated from?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I mentioned, the tax that supports the program is capped, but it only is taken from. When you have very high earners, like, for example, CEOs, a lot of times the majority of their compensation doesn't even come in the form of wages. It's in bonuses and stock incentives and other, like, non-wage forms of being paid for their services. So, like, a great example is Alan Shaw, who is the CEO of Norfolk Southern, the railroad that crashed in Ohio and is disrupting people's lives. He makes $600,000 about in wage income per year, but his total compensation is almost $4 million. So not only is he only paying a small portion of the taxes on his wage income of $600,000 a year, but actually he's paying even less than that because his total income is significantly higher than the $600,000 of, like, just wages that he's paying. So just on his wage income, he's actually only paying 1.6% of his income per year in Social Security taxes, which is probably less than both you and me. But in addition, it's actually a way smaller amount of his income because of all of those non-taxed different forms of compensation. And I mean, those cause problems for all sorts of reasons, not just for Social Security, but it does seem like if those are his compensation for doing his job and Social Security is supposed to come from that pay, maybe that should be taxed too.
Right. We're speaking with Sarah Rollins this evening. She's Program Associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And we'll repeat this when we conclude our conversation, Sarah, but your recent article summarizing your research can be found at the CEPR.net website. And the title of the article is Wage Cap Allows Millionaires to Stop Contributing to Social Security on February 24th, 2022, which means that the rest of the year they pay nothing, as you outlined in the article. Sarah, could you talk a bit about Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren's legislation that along the lines of what you proposed here, would increase what the wealthy pay into Social Security? I believe it's all income above $250,000 would be subject to the payroll tax. You want to speak to that a little bit in terms of what you know about that legislation?
So I'm not familiar with the details of the legislation they introduced, but I do think it's great for people to start considering this idea of just having the wealthy pay their fair share for Social Security. You know, it's the most effective anti-poverty program that we have in this country. Social Security Works estimated that the senior poverty rate would be over 40% without Social Security, but instead it's under 9%. And, you know, like, the topic comes up all the time, like it did in the State of the Union, because everyone agrees Social Security is really important and people want to know what the future of the program is. And I think that scrapping the cap is just such a simple change that would have such a big impact. It would be incredibly popular with the American people. It would be so easy to take a lot of the problem out of this, like, thorny political issue that comes up all the time.
What do we know about the popularity of increasing the rate on the richest people in the country? Because while Republicans propose increasing the eligibility age and cutting back on benefits, it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of information that's getting to real folks across the country about this alternative proposal. And I think that's probably the fault of the Democrats and our news media. And we can get to that in a moment. But what's your thinking about the popularity when you put a choice side by side, cutting your benefits, increasing your eligibility age versus taxing the wealthy just a little bit more to solve the problem? It seems like it would be a no-brainer.
I think so, too. You know, I'm not sure that a topic as wonky as like the Social Security payroll tax cap really makes its way into dinner conversation very often. But I do think that if more of these legislators' constituents knew that like the rich were almost exempt from paying for Social Security, while the rest of us see it as like a very sizable chunk of what comes out of our paycheck every month, you know, people would want change. Social Security itself, the program, is incredibly popular. That's why, you know, during the State of the Union, when the Republicans, you know, said something and Biden called out for them, no one is going to publicly say they want to end or really cut or damage Social Security, except for maybe a few people. And even then, they don't present it as getting rid of the program because it is really popular. And I think if people realize that it was being hamstringed by having this totally arbitrary tax cap, you know, it would be very popular to remove that cap and just have rich people pay the same amount as everyone else.
We're speaking with Sarah Rollins, Program Associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. We're talking about Social Security and its future. And in addition to Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren's proposed legislation to increase what the wealthy would pay into Social Security, and that would be income above $250,000, I did read recently that President Biden has backed a different plan to reinstate the payroll tax at annual wages above $400,000. And that is in sync with a payroll tax proposal from Connecticut Representative John Larson, something he calls his Social Security 2100 Act. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or what you think about Biden's different view here from Sanders and Warren, to really exempt folks up to $400,000. I'm not sure how that would play into strengthening and saving Social Security for years to come.
So, I mean, I think any increase in the cap is good. But I can't help but wonder why we really need to have one at all. I mean, all we're essentially saying is people who make over $400,000, which are, I don't know, even less likely to be doctors and even more likely to be CEOs, you know, like those people are exempt, but we're just creating a smaller subset of the ultra wealthy who don't have to pay one more tax. And maybe it's just a drop in the bucket at that point, because you're probably looking at, I don't know, are they exempt in the first place? They should be paying their fair share like everyone else.
Absolutely.
It just seems like an unnecessary division, you know?
You know, one other piece of this that's important to discuss, and that is there are many advocates across the country, including in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol, in Congress, where expanding Social Security benefits is a priority, including things like hearing and dental and vision care for seniors who are receiving Medicare, for instance. And I know we're kind of crossing lines here from Social Security into Medicare, but in general, what would you say about increasing the benefits as opposed to what many on the right are calling for in terms of, you know, cutting benefits?
I love that question, and I'm always disappointed that the conversation about reforming Social Security only ever seems to talk about how to make it smaller and never talks about how to make it better. You know, I've talked a little bit about the benefits of Social Security. 65 million people in the U.S. rely on it. One in six of those are not the elderly, but they're children of deceased workers or disabled workers, you know, getting those benefits, keeping children out of poverty as well. And I think as a country, you know, on the other side of a global pandemic, we might want to think about what we're prioritizing in our spending. You know, instead of making Social Security smaller, we could be looking at expanding disability benefits, because we probably have a lot more people than we did 3 years ago who have some form of disability. Or, you know, we lost a lot of people too. Maybe we want to think about stronger survival benefits. Maybe we really want to gather the wagons in that way now. You know, like, we could just decide at any point to just put money in the Social Security Trust Fund. It doesn't have to be this, like, fiscal cliff that comes up every few years and, like, is a doomsday scenario. Like, we as a country could just decide that, you know, elderly care, disability care, survivor benefits are important to us, and we want to prioritize those in our spending and just fund the program, expand it, make it more inclusive, have it cover better things.
Absolutely. Well, Sarah, just a last quick question. As someone who does a lot of research on Social Security issues and the problems the system faces and the solutions, how would you rate our corporate media system's coverage of this issue, whether it be the major newspapers or the TV networks? What kind of job have they done?
You know, it's hard to say, because when you do work on these topics, you do get some confirmation bias in the media that you consume. Like, maybe I notice Social Security more because I write about it. But I think a lot of people my age, you know, I'm like a millennial, think that Social Security won't be there for them when they retire. Like, it's very common to hear my peers joke, like, oh, I'm never going to be able to retire. I'll have to work until I die. And I think that's really disappointing. And especially given what I said to you at the beginning of our talk here today about benefits being reduced maybe to 80 or 70% in 10 years, that's or a little more than 10 years. But, like, you know, that's still, they're still going to be there. And I think it's disappointing that the coverage of this issue never talks about expansion and presents a scenario of already defeat instead of all the opportunities to make Social Security even stronger than it was when it was introduced 90 years ago.
Well, that's a good way to end this, and I'm glad we're covering that aspect of it, as well as you know, the challenges to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid in the immediate future. But I'd love to have you back on the program to talk more about where this national debate is going to go on rescuing Social Security from, you know, issues that are more than 10 years down the line. But Sarah, as we conclude here, leave our listeners with your website. And I'll just mention the name of your article that they can refer to, which we've been discussing this evening, and that is Wage Cap Allows Millionaires to Stop Contributing to Social Security on February 24th, 2022.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me, Scott, and for making space to have the other side of this conversation. I will just note that I actually made a calculator where people can go and enter in their salaries and the earnings of other people, prominent or otherwise, in the country, and see how much of that person's income they pay into Social Security, and if they're over the cap, when they stop paying for the year.
Okay, and the website I have right in front of me is cepr.net. Is that the place to go, or is there a little additional piece on that URL that we should mention?
Yep, cepr.net/scrapthecap.
Okay, scrap the cap there at the end. Got it. All right. Well, thanks so much, Sarah, and we'll stay in touch and make sure that our listeners are aware of these solutions to the problems with Social Security. We'll talk
thanks
soon
for
again.
Having
I hope
Scott.
You take care. Thanks a lot, Sarah. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
That's Sarah Rollins, program associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research.